You are listening to Books Are My People, a podcast for book lovers with book news, recommendations, and ruminations on living a literary life in Los Angeles. I'm your host, Jennifer Calogeras, and this is episode 117. Hello, and welcome, new listeners. I've been getting a lot of traction over on Substack, and I'm so happy to see so many book lovers over there, and maybe you found this podcast through my bookish Substack. However you found me, I'm happy you're here. It's been a busy January for sure, but I feel as though I've been really productive. Well, I was really productive until I got this winter cold. I made the grave error of watching the Netflix show You Are What You Eat, which presents as a silly reality show about multiple sets of twins. One goes vegan, one eats an omnivorous diet, but then there are all these little side journeys into the American food industry, and it's not pretty. And here I was driving around LA in my electric car thinking I'm doing my part, but really eating cows and really any animals are the biggest issue. I'm not going to preach because that would be hypocritical and also annoying. I've been eating as an omnivore almost my whole life, except for maybe 5 years of being a vegetarian when I was a teenager. But I will say the show really moved me to rethink my eating habits, and I've been eating vegan, except for the eggs our backyard chickens produce, since the beginning of January. And I'm currently researching true sustainable animal protein sources that won't contribute to global warming. Good luck to me. I exercise a lot, so I've really got to work hard to make sure I'm eating enough. We're on month 3 of fostering an 80-pound, maybe blue pit bull, maybe bull mastiff mix. She's brought so much joy into our lives, and she loves going to the hockey rink, which is great since I feel like we live there. She will actually sit and watch the games, which cracks me up because sometimes I can barely follow the puck. We're working on adopting her permanently, and I will keep you posted. My inaugural Read With Me series begins on Monday, February 5th. What is this, you ask? Well, we will collectively be reading and discussing Land of Milk and Honey by Si Pem Zhang on my Substack over 4 weeks in February. I'll release a new video at the start of each week, a short video. We'll read a quarter of the book each week, and there will be an open online discussion Friday through Sunday. If you are a paying subscriber to my Substack, you're in the club. And if you're a free subscriber, you can upgrade to paid or simply pay the $8 just for the month of February on February 5th to get all of the Read With Me content. And don't forget to purchase the book or get it from your library. We're also having our first Books Are My People book social over Zoom for paying subscribers on Substack to share what books we're reading and loving. I'll also be hosting a giveaway during this social, and the winner will get to choose from a stack of books. I'll post a photo of the choices tomorrow on Substack and Instagram, and paying subscribers will get a PDF of all the books discussed at the social. I'm looking forward to meeting those of you I haven't yet met over Zoom. I'm continuing with my volunteer transcribing over at the Library of Congress. Most recently, I transcribed, I guess it was a magazine from the new Leonard Bernstein collection. I recently saw Maestro, so I feel like it tied everything together to have me officially tethered to his history. I've seen a few other movies this season, like Saltburn, with my 14-year-old. Oopsie, can anyone say awkward? He can take it up with his therapist when he grows up. I also saw Poor Things on the recommendation of my dad, and I absolutely loved it. It was lush, it was weird, and it was all about female agency. And I have 3, count them, 3 works of art in forthcoming literary journals slated for 2024. I'm so excited about this move to the art world. And speaking of the art world, we have an amazing guest today. But first, it's time for a guest author book recommendation. Our guest author today is Angela Brown, the author of Olivia Strauss is Running Out of Time. And I recently read this book and loved it. It was so much fun and moving and just interesting and unique. In this book, Olivia Strauss is turning 39. She feels young and, you know, she's just living her life as though she has a full life ahead of her. Her best friend, Marion, gives her a birthday present that she could have lived without. It's a visit to this wellness center that tells you when you're going to die. Olivia takes the genetic test, and it sort of shifts her perspective and makes her question how she's been living her life. Sort of the big life questions of, you know, is this what you want to spend your time on Earth doing? It is a great fun read, and let's hear what Angela has to recommend for us today.
Hi, I'm Angela Brown, and I'm the author of Olivia Strauss Is Running Out of Time. My recommendation is Maybe Next Time by Cheska Major. The novel follows mother and stressed-out literary agent Emma, who, by way of a very fresh and clever use of a Groundhog Day structure, keeps waking up over and over on the worst day of her life. I love this book. I felt it was about so many things: motherhood, family, friendship, marriage, and most importantly, the fact that the small choices we make in a given day really do have the power to change the scope of our lives. I really loved the structure in this book. I love the sentiments that drive the story. I love the main character, Emma, who is such a relatable, frazzled, working mother and wife who is just trying her best. This is the rare book that made me both laugh out loud and also cry quite a bit. I saw so much of myself in Emma and her story. Definitely one of the top books I've been recommending to my friends, and I hope you'll check it out too. It's worth a read.
And again, that was Angela Brown, author of Olivia Strauss Is Running Out of Time, recommending Maybe Next Time by Cheska Major. Links to both books can be found in the show notes section of this podcast. And now it's time for some bookish news. According to NPR, these were the most checked out books of 2023. From the New York City Public Library system, it was Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. From the Libby app, which I use and love, the number one ebook checked out was, any guesses? It's nonfiction about royalty, Spare by Prince Harry. And Libby's number one e-magazine checkout this year was The New Yorker. Maybe someone somewhere aggregates all of the checkouts from all of the libraries nationally, because I'd be interested to see what those titles are, but I haven't been able to find that information. On January 1st, thousands of copyrighted works from 1928 entered the U.S. public domain, as well as audio recordings from 1923, which means it's a free-for-all, and this is probably why you will see some very unsavory things happen to the Steamboat Willie version of Mickey Mouse over the next year. Sort of like my Winnie the Pooh horror movie report from last year. There are writers who depend on these works going into public domain for their own careers. For example, D.H. Lawrence's Lady Chatterley's Lover is now up for grabs, so maybe there's a graphic novel in the works. That was supposed to be a double entendre, because if you know the book, it's full of steamy scenes. Other works of literature entering the public domain that I found interesting include Virginia Woolf's Orlando, and I believe I recently read that this is going to be a play in New York. Millions of Cats, which is the oldest American picture book still in print, and thousands more. Songs entering the public domain include Mac the Knife, When You're Smiling, and Making Whoopee. I can rethink my whole podcast intro song now. I will leave a link in the show notes to the full list of books, films, and songs entering the public domain. Libby, the app that helps you check out ebooks from the library, has rolled out some new features. You can now suggest titles to your library. I hate it when I try to order a book from the library and it acts like the book doesn't even exist. Now, not only can you suggest a title they don't have, but you can tell them to notify you when your book arrives. And there's also an enhanced technical support team for when you feel too frustrated to continue. Ever been there? I have. I am so excited about our next guest because not only is she an amazing human being, but she is also my friend. H. Maria Armijo is a multidisciplinary artist born in Tegucigalpa, Honduras, to a Chilean mother and a Honduran father. She immigrated to a suburb of Dayton, Ohio. Her life's work revolves around art, literacy, advocacy, and storytelling. Like me, she learned to paint during the pandemic. She uses her collection of family artifacts to tell the story of memory, communication, loss, diaspora, assimilation, and the things that bind us, Unlike me, she is an incredibly brilliant painter. Her interests lie at the intersection of creating and sharing culture through paintings, textiles, and exploratory art. Currently, Maria is an adjunct faculty member at Cuyahoga Community College, where she teaches illustration and design portfolio. She is also a reference and instructional librarian at Lakeland Community College. She holds a BFA in Fiber Arts from the University of Cincinnati, a MSSA from Case Western Reserve University in Community Practice for Social Change, and a MLIS in Young Adult Librarianship. Maria, I have an art friend named Maria.
No one's ever saying that to me before.
Really?
You're being sarcastic. No, every school teacher, my whole life.
Every school mom, your whole life. I just am jealous because I have no song. I just have that Tommy Two Tone 8675309.
Yeah.
It's kind of a fun love song, though.
I think we can do better, people, writers out there. So hello and welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
I've said this before on the show, and I'll say it again. I'm always the most nervous when I have friends on the show. So we are living proof that the pandemic had some silver linings, because that is when we became friends. And what brought us together was Charlotta Hamilton of Blue Shine Art, where we painted together during the pandemic and to this day. And our friendship has also developed into a lovely artist support group, which has been amazing.
It is really kind of the cool thing that happened with the pandemic, right?
We can get to some art talk eventually, but first I want to talk books. So share with us how you decided to pursue library studies.
It's not a very linear story. I'll start off with that. In 10th grade, I met and started hanging out with my brother-in-law, who was a bookseller, and he would bring home books instead of paychecks. So his library was amazing. And he realized very quickly that my reading level was low as a 10th grader. I was at sixth grade reading level. And he taught me how to read in those 2 years, to where my reading level went up. And so I became really appreciative of books and of different kinds of subcultures of books. He taught me how to read with the beat writers. And I learned a lot about Jack Kerouac and Allen Ginsberg. And so that was my eye opening to the fact that I was struggling with school because I didn't know how to read. And so when I finally decided to go to college, I incorporated art into literacy. That was my big focus. How was I going to teach other people how to read when they were struggling, especially immigrants and English second language learners? So that's how I got into literacy. And then after I graduated, I developed community literacy programs that were art-based. So I taught first graders how to read, and then I quickly learned that I had to teach parents and caregivers how to read in the community. So I did that for almost 10 years. And then I decided when my kids were born that librarianship was where I needed to be, where I could talk about books and engage children with books. And so I got my librarianship in young adult literature.
That's fantastic. What are some of your duties as a librarian?
I teach at a community college. So mostly what I do is teach classrooms on how to look for literature that supports whatever they're studying. Information literacy is really important in this day and age because we have so much access to information. It doesn't mean that we have access to the correct information. So I teach classes on how to access information. And then I also teach one-on-one classes on how to access that information. For instance, a lot of professors require students to look for articles in journals. And a lot of students that haven't had a background in writing will look up blogs because they think that's journaling, which it is true. It is journaling. But so there's always like a misconception of what teachers think students know and what students actually know. So that always is kind of mind-blowing to me. I do recommend books. One of my big things that I do with students when they come into the library is I take them to the stacks, because I feel like, because we're so used to using our phones, that we don't necessarily wonder and wander and explore things other than what we're trying to find exactly when we're going to Google or the internet. And so I take them to the stacks and then we can just look at subjects.
It's really a tactile experience walking through a library and being able to go to a certain subject matter and touch the books. And, the discoverability factor, I think, goes away when you move to an online-only library, which I've heard schools are doing this now. They're getting rid of their librarians and they're just moving to online-only, which I think is such a travesty for so many reasons. But I've asked this of booksellers before, but as a librarian, do you ever feel compelled to try and curate a person's reading list, like open them up to something that's new and maybe different for them, or are you more focused on helping them find a book in their lane that you know they'll enjoy?
I do a mixture of both, because I do want them to come back and talk to me about what they read. So if they're in there, they know for sure that they only like this kind of book, I will do that. But if I have read something that I think is near to it, I will definitely suggest that. But everyone's so different with what they want from the library.
Right. So you have to know so much. You can't just know what you like. You have to know what anyone might like. Speaking of lanes, do you have a particular book lane? If you had to define what kinds of books you gravitate towards, I'm curious about what they'd be.
I have four
Four lanes.
lanes.
Oh, you're a four-lane
Yes,
highway. I love it.
I am. HEA's Happily Ever Afters. I love my romance novels. I have to read one every night before I go to bed. POC memoirs, people of color memoirs. I
Oh, me
love
too.
those. Young adult literature and picture books.
I feel like my road is definitely almost anything except for romance. That's the one that's where our roads do not intersect. Have you read any of the hockey romances out there? That's a whole genre that
I
I
just
thought I would
finished
like.
one.
Oh, really?
Oh, I don't remember the name of the book, but it was
Was
in
it like What
California.
the
It was
Puck or
college.
something?
I read that one.
Oh, you
You know
have.
what's funny about romance is I didn't get into romance until I worked at a public library. And people would come up to us all the time asking for recommendations, and none of the librarians read romance. So I started reading romance so I could start re recommending, and I fell in love with it because it makes me so happy.
Well, I feel like definitely my entry point needs to be hockey romance if I'm going to give it a try. So maybe I will
Yeah,
do
do it.
that. I think
I'll send you a recommendation.
if I had to pick a lane, it would definitely be character-driven literary fiction about any subject, really, but that's what I like. I speak a lot on this show about book bans, and it's something I'm passionately against. Have you, as a librarian, or has your library been affected by the current torrent of book bans?
Our library has not been affected, but our local public libraries have been affected, and it's getting to the point where librarians are taking classes on self-defense and how to take care of themselves physically when patrons come in and demand a book. But we do have several things in place if it comes to our library, like what forms and how do we talk to people about it? But it breaks my heart and it makes me sad, especially as someone who loves, memoirs of POC people, like, and who's an advocate and ally for LGBTQ plus. To be seen and to be heard is such a value, and it upsets me that some people want to take that away from people.
Absolutely. It's constant. It's just like a constant onslaught of people trying to control other people's access to information.
And
Well,
the libraries do a really good job of reading the books and understanding the books. So it's not like we're just accepting any old books. They are curated to a certain extent. So I don't get it.
I don't get it either, but we need to do everything we can to make it stop. And now it's time for the books. So, Maria, what is your first pick?
My first pick is a memoir, Saigon, a Misfits Memoir of Great Books, Punk Rock, and the Fight to Fit In by Phuc Tran. It's a great book about an immigrant from Vietnam moving to a suburb in Pennsylvania in the 1970s, about not f fitting in, trying to fit in, and the turbulence that a teenager has just growing up in the 80s. It talks about assimilation and racism and family expectations, and how punk rock and great literature and art were all the saving graces for Phuc. It's a really moving story, and I related to it immensely. And that was Saigon, a Misfits memoir of great books, punk rock, and the fight to fit in by Phuc Tran.
I've heard amazing things about this memoir. It has been on my to-read list, and I can't wait to get to it. My first pick is The Vulnerables by Sigrid Nunez. And Nunez is the author of The Friend, which was a National Book Award winner a few years ago. And she's also written seven other novels. The Vulnerables is a slender 242 pages. It is a quiet pandemic novel. And in it, the unnamed female narrator is asked to parrot sit for a friend of a friend in a nice apartment in New York City. The narrator is a writer struggling with writer's block as she's too distracted to write because of the pandemic and the ensuing anxious thoughts. We can all relate to that. Much of the novel is her interiority during this time. It's rife with associative thinking and memories. Nunez explores the experiences of reading and writing. The narrator is grappling with why she writes, and a lot of her thoughts are fleeting, they're funny, they're honest, they're raw. And being the book nerd that I am, I clocked each and every one of the over 50 novels and authors Nunez references in this book, and I'm going to compile a list of them for a post on my Substack in the next week or two. This was a wonderful read, but I think it will especially speak to readers and writers alike, as it's a book about language. And I learned a great new word, biophilia, which means an affinity with and desire to connect with other living things and understand them, which is what Nunez seems to be doing in many of her novels, and it's also something I like to explore in my writing and art. And again, that's The Vulnerables by Sigrid Nunez, and I got it at my library. Maria, what's your next pick?
My next pick is I'd Rather Burn Than Bloom by Shannon S.C. Rogers. It's a YA novel about a half-Filipina teen girl in New Mexico trying to navigate her life with the constant fighting she has with her mom. But when her mom dies, she's lost, left with all the things unsaid and said, and her family is kind of lost, and she meets some friends where she's slowly opening up to her emotions other than anger. It's a very compelling and bittersweet story about, and I think anyone would like to read it. It's not just for teens. And that's I'd Rather Burn Than Bloom by Shannon S.C. Rogers.
I feel like young adult literature is so underrated, and people think they can't read it because they're not teenagers anymore. And that's like saying I should only read books about people in their 40s because I'm not 30 anymore. I think a well-written young adult novel is just as an amazing reading experience as any well-written novel. My second pick is You Dreamed of Empires by Alberto Enrique, translated from the Spanish by Natasha Wimmer. And it might be Wimmer. I'm not sure. I first talked about Enrique when I recommended his novel Sudden Death way back on episode 12 of Books Are My People. That one was about Italian artist Caravaggio and the Spanish poet Francisco de Quevedo playing tennis with a ball made from the hair of the beheaded Anne Boleyn. So picking up an Enrique novel, you know you're going to get something both weird and historical, and You Dreamed of Empires is just that. It's a reimagined history taking readers back in time to 1519 in what is now Mexico City. Cortez, the Spanish conquistador, has journeyed there to meet Aztec Emperor Moctezuma. It's speculated that this meeting did, in fact, occur, and much of this novel is about the time leading up to that meeting. In this version, it's possible that Moctezuma is on mushrooms. It's that kind of reimagining. So how do I sum up what this book is about? I think it's easier to speak about how it is. It's like watching fireworks. Humorous fireworks, if that were a thing. Fireworks that make you laugh, but also feel a little bit uncomfortable. As I was reading, I started wondering if maybe I was on mushrooms. And just to be clear, I was not. This novel is large, bombastic, bloody, and crass. If this were the norm for novels, I don't think I'd be much of a reader, and I don't mean that as a dig, but in a sea of similar books, You Dreamed of Empires is a kaleidoscopic tour de force. Enrique is a well-known writer in Mexico, but here in the States, this is only his third book to be translated into English. This novel is definitely not a strict historical novel. It bounces all over, kind of like the tennis ball in Sudden Death, and references modern day things. And again, that's You Dreamed of Empires by Alberto Enrique, translated from the Spanish by Natasha Wimmer. What is your last pick?
My last pick is a chapter book called The Skull by John Klassen. John Klassen is mostly a picture book writer and illustrator. He has a very interesting wry humor with his illustrations and books. This is a story about a little girl who has escaped danger and finds a house that's been inhabited by a skull. And she spends time with a skull and saves the skull from something that they are scared of. It's a witty retelling of a folk tale, and it is matched beautifully with his monochromatic illustrations. It's a little on the naughty side, not in a very bad way, but I think kids will love it because it isn't a typical story where everything's funny and clean. There's a little bit of darkness to it because it is a skull that we're talking about. And that is The Skull by John Klassen.
He wrote a beautiful, I believe it was middle grade, it might have been younger. I remember reading it out loud to my kids, a beautiful novel called Pax. Did you ever read that?
Oh yeah, that was beautiful. Yes.
It was gorgeous. If you have kids that you're still reading to, A, I'm very jealous, and B, you should read that book to them. Well, Maria, we spend so much time talking about art. It's been so fun getting to speak with you about books. Where can people find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram at h.mariaarmijo. That's where you can find me, and I post only images.
Maria's an incredible artist. I've said this before and I'll say it again. You should go check out her work. I will link up to Maria's Instagram account as well as her website in the show notes, and you can find links to all the books we've talked about in the show notes. They're linked up to my Books Are My People store on bookshop.org, and purchasing books through my store is an easy way to support the show. And Maria, you're going to be in book club in February, right?
Yay! Yes, I got the book this
I'm
week.
so
Excited.
excited. So you can come hang out with Maria, come hang out with me, and we are going to be reading Land of Milk and Honey together starting February 5th. Thanks again so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I'll be back in 2 weeks, and in the meantime, I hope you all have a wonderfully bookish week.